Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Kavanagh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Welcome back to our first NICE workshop for 2020, when we're discussing romances and relationships in the four novels selected this year.
All right, welcome back everybody to Community Education and Arts NICE workshop number two, session three.
Workshop number one, session three.
Yes. We have divided today into talking about different relationships. So good relationships, bad relationships, and now we're talking about friend zones. And the books that we are exploring this year for NICE, which is Noblesville Interdisciplinary Creativity Expo, are the classics Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Dracula, and Little Women. So all of the relationships we're talking about today are from those four books. And by best friend-zoned couple, friend zone is a term that today specifically means one of the parties is interested in a romantic relationship and the other one is only interested in being friends. However, after discussing this, we decided to kind of broaden our interpretation to include just plain friends, mm-hmm. so we could have more to talk about. So, Alice, would you like to talk about our poll results?
Sure, I would love to. We did poll on social media several of the pairings from each book. And I will say, just to kind of piggyback on what you just said, we did discuss, you know, that friends in some of these books, like in Little Women, there are friendships between the sisters, for example, that were in our original social media polls and stuff like that. So we did have relationships that weren't based on, a one-sided or earlier romance, as it were. And also, of course, as always, I gotta say, Dracula, the book that doesn't quite fit our... in anything that has to do with the relationships, because Dracula is a blood-sucking monster, but the relationships in that book also kind of gender bend, shall we say, so because I'm not sure what gender we put Dracula in. He presents as a man, but who knows. But anyway, yes, we did have social media polls, and our finalists, one from each book, the best friend-zoned relationships were, the contenders were Jane and St. John from Jane Eyre, which is interesting because they were in our most dysfunctional category as well, Melanie and Rhett from Gone with the Wind, Arthur and Lucy from Dracula, and Joe and Laurie from Little Women. And then when we had those finalists, the winner out of those finalists was the relationship of Arthur and Lucy in Dracula. I will say that Jane and St. John from Jane Eyre got 33% of the vote on Twitter. Melanie and Rhett from Gone with the Wind got 33% of the vote on Twitter. And Arthur and Lucy from Dracula got 33% of the vote on Twitter and 100% of the vote from Facebook. So Arthur and Lucy were our social media winners in terms of friend zone. And interestingly, their relationship does fit that original definition of kind of a unrequited love on one side, you know, one person having an unrequited love, because Arthur loved Lucy and wanted to marry her, and she put him in the friend zone. So, yeah.
Yeah, these results are so interesting to me, especially since Joe and Lori didn't get any votes.
I know!
People?
You know what? I think that is a... I would love to say that history from the time that Louisa May Alcott wrote these books... that, you know, her public wanted Joe and Lori to end up together. And so I'm saying cosmically, they got no votes because they didn't end up together. I don't know. That's just me being silly.
I would love to dissect Joe and Lori, but I do want to, before I start yakking, any comments from the floor, opening the floor to all participants, if you have any comments about our four that were in the top pickings.
Spike, you go first.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. It takes a minute.
I couldn't find my own mute button.
I know. It takes a minute to unmute. Yeah.
So, Laurie and Joe were in the finals, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, good, good.
But they got no votes.
Yeah.
They got no vote. Not even one.
Sarah and I saw a very interesting documentary on Alcott recently, and by the way, found out in that it's pronounced Alcott.
Really? I've never said it that
way. Well, at least according to the curator of the Alcott Museum in Concord.
I'm 57 years old. I might be too old to start pronouncing her last name differently than I have for 57 years, but I'll try, because I definitely say Alcott.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it matters so much.
Right.
But this documentary talked about how when Alcott was traveling through Europe. You see, I say Alcott too.
That's okay.
But when she was traveling through Europe, she met a much younger man who that she had a very brief love affair with that
yes.
she realized could never really happen.
Yeah.
In the end, and kind of the ultimate friend zoning. Actually, I don't think she ever saw him again, but she was very much his Laurie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there are also the ideas that maybe Thoreau's son or one of Emerson's nephews, I believe, could have been the model for Laurie. I think it's an amalgamation of several young men she knew, really.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All of whom were pretty close friends of hers. I mean, she, as a child, played with Nathaniel Hawthorne's
mm-hmm,
son as well.
Mm-hmm. And they were close, if I remember correctly, from my readings of her biographies.
The Alcott family bought a house from Hawthorne.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's very fitting that these are, that these were close friends of Louisa.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Laurie is friend-zoned, if you will, is in the context of Louisa's real life, she never married, of
mm-hmm.
course, is sad in a way, but inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it would be, you know, if Laurie and Joe are too alike in their tempers, you know, it's very similar, as we were discussing, to some of the reasons why Joe and Amy don't get along
mm-hmm.
when they're younger.
Yeah.
The same reason that Laurie and Joe often get into these fights and, you know, she says we'd kill each other if we got married.
Right. Which is an interesting thing for her to say, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, but the fact that their relationship does kind of have that element of slight, I don't want to say completely unrequited love, because Laurie does get over her and marry and fall in love and marry Amy. But similarly, you know, St. John has the romantic interest in Jane when Jane doesn't really have that in him. And at least they got some votes this time. And Arthur and Lucy, we already said, you know, Arthur loves Lucy, Lucy friendzones him. Melanie and Rhett are really the only couple in our finalists that never have the romance in any part of their relationship. They start as friends in a strange way, and throughout the entire story, they keep that, they maintain that friendship.
Yeah.
And it is actually one of my favorite parts of Gone with the Wind. The relationship between Melanie and Rhett is one of the most interesting, because I don't know how much you guys know about Margaret Mitchell's own life, but Rhett Butler's character is most likely based, in part at least, on a lot of the stories she heard as a child about blockade runners and those kind of people, but also her first husband, who was, they had a tempestuous and tumultuous and oftentimes violent relationship. He was abusive. And I'm not trying to say Rhett was completely based on him, but in part it is known that Rhett was based on that fellow that she married, and her first husband anyway, her second husband, who was not an abusive man. But it's interesting that Melanie and Rhett have this relationship that is based kind of on a mutual understanding, and I want to say respect in a way. Mm-hmm. That definitely we will go into their relationship more behind the scenes, Sarah E., in our podcast, because I think it's a relationship worth discussing. But since they didn't win, I don't know how our social media poll, I'm not sure how far we need to get into it today. But Spike, do you have any thoughts on Arthur and Lucy as in Dracula as being so dominant in the polls?
In Dracula, it's been so long since I read it, to be honest mm-hmm. with you.
That's okay.
What I've read most recently, and I would recommend, by the way, Stephen King wrote a brilliant essay on Gothic horror novels mm-hmm. and talks primarily about Dracula and Frankenstein being the two extremes of the genre.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend that to anyone who wants to do further reading. But it's been so long, I don't really remember enough to
well,
make
Well, you know, Arthur is Lord, what's his last name, Holmes or something, I can't remember, Lord somebody. He's titled, he's rich, he's the most eligible husband material, and sure. Lucy is, probably her family thinks she should marry him, you know. But she doesn't have the feeling. She loves him, but not, you know, not enough to marry him. And he ends up being one of the, what I call the band of brothers who, you know, go after Dracula and kill him. And Arthur is actually the one who, after Lucy has been turned by Dracula into a vampire, Arthur is the one who drives the stake in her heart to save her soul. And for that reason alone, I say, you know, they deserve the win. Because what an ultimate gesture of love and friendship on his part to destroy her corpse to save her soul. And he does that out of love and friendship for her. So I do feel like they deserve the win. And there are moments in their story that are very beautiful and poignant in some ways. Sarah E., your thoughts?
So I love the Kill Vampy Squad.
The Kill Vampy Squad. Okay, that's a better name than Band of Brothers. Yeah.
By which I mean Van Helsing,
mm-hmm.
Arthur Holmwood,
mm-hmm.
Quincy Morris, the American.
The American, yeah.
Hilarious stereotype of an American, mm-hmm. but I love him. And John Seward.
Yes.
And there are three of them that all propose to Lucy in, like, one of our first introductory letters.
Right. Quincy, Arthur, and Dr. Seward, John, mm-hmm. all propose to her. Mm-hmm.
What I love about that scene is that Lucy describes how each of them, as she turns all of them but Arthur down, how each of them pivots and is like, oh, well, I wish the best for you if I may ever be of service to you. And part of that is just, you know, saving face and lip service mm-hmm. thing, but they all actually
end up falling through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do her service. They do try to save her life. Yep. They donate blood. They go become the Kill Vampy Squad.
Yeah.
And so I think that Quincy and Dr. John Seward, they're great as friend-zoned characters.
I thought she gets engaged to John. Isn't it John that she gets engaged to?
She gets engaged to Arthur, doesn't
oh,
she?
Oh, sorry. We have two different memories. I don't know. I'm confused. I don't know I don't know what I'm saying.
Because Seward is the one with all of the recordings that he makes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, he's in charge of Renfield. Ooh. Renfield and Dracula did not make it past our initial dysfunctional relationship poll from our last session, but I thought they would. They have such a dysfunctional relationship. But no, anyway, yeah. So, the three guys are pretty amazing. And, you know, when they take that vow to remain friends and be there if she ever needs them and all that, like you said, that's out of politeness. That's what men were supposed to say in that circumstance. And then, like, run away with the tail between their legs and go find someone else to marry and never bother that woman again, right? Mm-hmm. But you know what reminded me? What this seemed very familiar is, like, if you watch any adaptations or movies of the Trojan War, you know, with the, and all the Paris gives the apple to, you know, Aphrodite, and because she lets him have Helen, and all the men who have to come to, I think it's Menelaus's aid to, it's like a treaty, right? It's like these countries and these kings have these treaties to go to each other's aid when someone has, you know, insulted them. And it's kind of, it reminds me of that, that these guys all come together to save Lucy, you know, because they vowed that they would always be there for her if she needed them. And lo and behold, she really needs them because Dracula is on her case, right? So to me, that was an interesting little thing that I thought of, that, you know, they take their vow so seriously. And, you know, if you wrote this book in today's world, I don't really know how you would have that happen, because today, you know, it's very seldom that you see someone take, you know, live up to some kind of a promise that they said just to save face, kind of, you know. So the face saving vow that becomes life or death, you know.
it's pervasive in ancient literature.
Yes,
this
definitely.
Idea of the oath unto mm-hmm. death. I mean, mm-hmm. you find that I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but to me the most notable and powerful example is the Peachtree Oath in Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Yeah.
But you know, you're right that as we get into the modern era, and even in the time that Dracula was written, the idea of that honor, that oath unto death, the honor of it is disappearing.
Right.
So it's almost a throwback.
Right.
I exactly. also want to make the point that if Buffy had been a character in this, this novel would be about a fourth of its length.
Yeah, I agree.
Just saying, you wouldn't have needed the Kill Vampy squad.
Yeah, well, all older books are much more verbose than modern ones. But I do love that Arthur and Lucy do represent. And you're right, Sarah E. You were right about the fact that they are the ones that get engaged. Not John Seward is the one who she turns down, as well as Quincy. So, what I love about their relationship is that, you know, they truly have this friendship throughout the story, despite the fact that they are affianced, you know, mm-hmm. that Arthur and Lucy are also romantically a couple. Their friendship is very deep. And I think that is what kind of shines through in their relationship, because honestly, I can't really say he loves her more than Quincy or John Seward did. I don't think the love is elevated as much as just the feelings that they all three have for her as her friend, and two of them rejected lovers, but you know, as her friend and wanting to save her soul. It's almost like a religious quest. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a crusade to save her soul. Really, that's another thing that is metaphorically similar to me. For me personally, I would have tied probably Arthur and Lucy and Melanie and Rhett in this category, because Melanie and Rhett see each other so clearly and staunchly support one another throughout the story, despite each other's flaws. And, you know, even Melanie's last words are in support of Rhett. So I feel like we had some really good selections that came out in the poll, but there were also a lot of good, you know, friend-zoned relationships that didn't quite make it through our social media polls. Join us next time as we continue our workshop discussions of the romances and relationships in our four nice books this year. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.